You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. At this time, we ask that you turn off all cell phones, unless, of course, you're using them to listen to this podcast, in which case, please keep it on. And please refrain from any flash photography, as it is dangerous to the performers of this podcast. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith.
This is Pamela.
And this is Ebony.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous, the show where we talk about Broadway flops, scandals, and new works.
Who sues? Who fails? We tell their stories.
You have to sing it, Ebony. I set you up.
I don't sing. It's going to be so bad.
But really good?
No. Just bad.
Broadway flops, scandals, new works. Go.
No.
Oh. All right. Who fails? Who sues? We tell the story. Oh. Did you like that?
The vocal fry at the end.
Well, it is late in the day. It just comes very naturally when it's late in the day like this.
It does.
But I also wanted to add like a little R&B type feel. Well, if you've stumbled upon us, you know that Ebony and I like to talk about theater.
We do. We like to talk about theater, and we like to talk about how theater fell apart.
Yeah.
And be sad about it.
Yeah.
But then hopeful that maybe one day whatever fell apart could be fixed and put back together.
Who knows?
Possible.
Or maybe it already has, and you'll find out at the end of the story.
That
thank you for foreshadowing.
Yeah. I saw a play.
What play?
I saw Vanity Fair.
Ooh, tell me everything.
Yeah, okay, so there's this theater company that I'm kind of obsessed with called Bedlam. They produced Sense and Sensibility at the Gym at Judson. And I found out about it because I made a friend during the time she was in this play.
Yeah.
And, I mean, P.S., she's baller.
Okay.
But, like, also, Eric Tucker, the director, is brilliant.
Okay.
I have a talent crush on him, I think.
Oh, I love talent crushes.
Yes. Because the amount of imagination and joy that he imbues into his work is just... I just love it.
Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it.
Sidebar, I cannot use the word baller. Because if I if I tried to say something was baller, it'd be the stupidest, like, lamest thing. Hey, Ebony, your hair looks baller today. Can you imagine?
No. No, don't do it.
I won't. Hey, you know what else is baller?
What?
Today's episode.
I'm so excited.
Are you? Okay, this one is called Cape Man, Musical.
Is there somebody wearing a cape in this show?
Oh, yes, there is. Oh, yes. You'll find out.
Okay.
So, Cape Man, the Musical was written by Paul Simon.
I love him.
Yes, that Paul Simon of Simon and Garfunkel fame. Of him. What is the
Call Me Out.
Like, that's because I remember the video growing up with Chevy Chase and Paul Simon. Like, oh, it was the best. It was so good. I just couldn't remember the name. That's all. But I remembered the lick.
The song from The Graduates, the one that, like, parsley, sage, rosemary.
Yes. Yeah. I like more of the fast songs.
But that one, I just feel like...
Parsley, sage,
yes. It just always... I'm like, every time I'm cooking with parsley, sage, or thyme, or rosemary, those are the...
And you can cook with all of them together the time. You anytime you want. On vegetables, on chicken,
really
on steak, on fish. In pasta.
In pasta.
It's really baller in pasta.
Every time you say that, it's hilarious.
Baller. So, in addition to Paul Simon, it was also helped written. Wow.
It was helped written.
Do you like my English?
Helped written.
It was also written with the help of Derek Walcott, who was a 1992 Nobel Prize winner for literature.
He just passed away.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he passed away. So that is sad, but we'll celebrate his life.
Yeah,
today, in this. In 1988. Paul Simon started work on this show, and he was aided by Carlos Ortiz, who translated the source material that he was able to find.
I know the source material, you know, like the story, but like I didn't understand why it was called the Cape Man. I never understood.
Well, let me enlighten you.
Okay.
So the synopsis of the musical is set in August of 1959. It follows 16-year-old Salvador Agron, who is a member of a street gang known as the Vampires. He murders two teenagers on a playground, and he became known as the Cape Man because he was wearing a long vampire-like cape with a red lining while committing the murders. The musical begins with Agron's. Yeah, it's not light material at all.
Right.
It's very heavy.
I knew that, but I didn't. Okay, so he was wearing a cape.
He was wearing the cape
while he did the murder.
Well, I feel like, I mean, I guess at that point in time, you had to make a name for yourself if you were in the gang. And so that was his shtick, wearing the cape.
Okay.
But I think who actually coined the term Cape Man were the press. When they told this story, they were like, this, you know, this 16-year-old murderer.
Okay. It's like how they did the BTK killer.
Exactly. So we're going to call him the Cape Man.
Okay.
Yeah. The musical begins with Agron's childhood in Puerto Rico and then follows his family's move to New York City. He has a rough childhood, which I'll get into later, but it included frequent encounters with his stepfather. At first, he was more interested in girls than gangs, but he ends up joining the Vampires because they rescue him when another gang attacks him. Later, when Agron's friend is beaten, the gang seeks revenge for his friend. They never found the gang that hurt his friend, but Agron stabs two innocent bystanders to death. He is captured and sentenced to death, and he claims to be unrepentant. That's the first act. So, and curtain, can you imagine what that intermission is like? Oh my goodness. Second act begins with the sentence being commuted by Governor Rockefeller to life in prison. Angry Salvador starts to grow up and eventually turns his life around. He starts a correspondence with a Native American woman named, this is best guess, Wazinak. It's spelled W-A-H-Z-I-N-A-K. It's a Native American name. So if I'm pronouncing it wrong, let me know. But I think that's my best guess is Wazinak, which was played by Sarah Ramirez of Spamalot fame.
Sarah,
when I read,
if you're
that,
listening to this, can you please do me a favor and come back to Broadway, please?
Please,
please.
We
really do. Please come back. Okay.
Can you, like, I just, every time I think of her, I laugh because of her Tony Award acceptance speech thanking Claritin. I'm like, yes. Yeah, who else? I mean, like, every actor was like, yes, thank you. Yes. I think Zyrtec, yes. But same kind of deal.
Right.
And he falls in love with that Native American woman, who is basically corresponding with him while he's in prison. He escapes prison to be with her, but after having a vision in the desert, he turns himself back in. 3 years are added to his sentence, which he quietly serves, and when he gets out, he discovers the world can only ever know him as Cape Man. No matter how much he changed in prison, his mother is the only one who accepts him. She tells him she dreamt an angel allowed him into heaven. And that's the end of the show. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the real Salvador Agron.
Okay.
He was born in April 24th, 1943, and he died April 22nd, 1986. That's not really important. I just thought I'd point that out. But his mother was divorced his alcoholic father and started work at a convent for $8 a day. Mm.
This would have been back in the 40s. Nuns essentially separated the mother from her two children. Sal had a sister named Aria. The nuns would discipline them with an iron fist and often leave the children in the same room as all of the insane inmates of the convent. No. Isn't that awful? But the mother had no say in it. Ugh, it's terrible. Mother finally married a Pentecostal minister to get her kids back, and they moved to New York City.
Okay.
So it doesn't really explain whether or not she loved him. The way that they told me just made it seem like she married him in order to get her kids back and get out of Puerto Rico.
Right.
But who knows? Maybe they liked each other.
It sounds like she at least loved her children.
Absolutely. And that never changes. Mm-hmm. Until the end of this story, the mother is really super supportive of Salvador mm-hmm. Agron. Aria, it's A-U-E-R-E-A. It's okay. Aria, I'll just call her Aria. Said in, I think it was either a book that she wrote or an interview that she gave. She told people that the stepdad hated Sal from the very start, that he would give him lashings with a thick rope until his body was covered in welts. He kept the refrigerator chained, so the only food available was controlled by him. Gifts given to the children by friends and family would be taken away and thrown out. It told me then later when Sal got to be about 13 years old, his stepdad would ban him from the house for days at a time, basically forcing him to fend for himself on the streets of New York City. When a gang tried to force Sal to join, he asked his mother if he could go live with his father in Mayagüez, Puerto Rico. Less than a year with his father, he had a bad childhood, I'm telling you. Less than a year with his father, Sal came home to discover the body of his stepmother.
No!
She had hung herself.
No! No!
So at that point, his father sent him back to New York, where at age 15, he joined the gang called the Mau Maus and later joined the Vampires. So, like, he was set up for failure, this poor kid.
Okay, so really quick. This week, another thing I did was I went to a talk with a reformed neo-Nazi.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of the things that he talked about was when he joined, he didn't necessarily join up for the ideology.
He joined
the
for
neo-Nazis.
Protection, probably.
Well,
and family.
It's the family aspect. So it's like that need to belong that we all have. And so...
Well,
it just sounds
and
like,
these gangs will prey on that. They'll see a child that has been isolated or has been mistreated, and they'll swoop in and say, hey, we'll take care of you.
Yeah.
You know, we got your back. I bet your stepdad doesn't have your back, that kind of stuff. So it's just really awful.
Mm-hmm.
August 30th of 1959, Sal is 15 years old. The Vampires were on their way to a rumble with the Norsemen, which was a rival Anglo-Saxon gang, when Agron mistakenly stabs three teenagers and flees. The two of them, Anthony Krasinski and Robert Young Jr., both die. The newspapers nickname him the Cape Man because of the long Dracula-like cape he wore while committing the murders. And he's quoted as saying, I don't care if I burn, my mother could watch me. At age 16, he's the youngest person ever to be sentenced to death in New York State.
Holy jeez.
Both Eleanor Roosevelt and Robert Young Sr., who was the father of one of the victims who died, campaigned for leniency. And in 1962, his sentence is commuted to life in prison.
Okay.
So they saw, you know, 16-year-old kid being sentenced to death. And yes, he did horrible things, but that's such a...
Yeah.
Talk about the prison system. This is a whole other podcast. Yeah. I will be getting back to musical theater, though. Don't you worry. he has learned to read and write, and he's gotten his GED, started writing poetry, and he received his associate's degree. I feel like that rhymed.
It was a little sing-songy.
It really was. I didn't mean to. In 1976, Governor Carey reduces his sentence, which makes him eligible for release in 1977. But in April of 1997, he escapes to Phoenix, but he's captured 2 weeks later. So he's eligible. In 1976, he's told, next year, you're getting out. But he makes it to next year, just not to the full extent of that year. And he decides to escape, which
makes
just, I mean,
no sense.
None at all. Like, none at all. November of 1977, he's found not guilty of the escape, though, due to mental illness. So I don't get that. And on November 1st, 1979... because a couple of years were added to a sentence from the escape, even though he was not guilty. I don't know. That's really strange, too. He's released from prison. He's age 36. He worked as a youth counselor and spoke out against gangs for over 5 years at that point. And on April 16th, 1986, he's 42. He's admitted to the hospital for pneumonia and internal bleeding, and he dies 6 days later, surrounded by friends and family. So let's go back to the show. That is who the main character of Cape Man is. I mean, you did an episode on Legs Diamond where you said it was really hard to like the character. Right. And starting out reading the synopsis and then finding out who this guy is, I'm kind of inclined to follow that thinking. Right. It's really hard to find any kind of redeeming quality in a 16-year-old that's willing to just stab and be completely remorseless. However, we'll get there a little bit. Excuse me. January 29th of 1998, it opened on Broadway. The cast included Mark Anthony and Ruben Blades.
I'm shaking my head.
Anthony. Who knows? He may have been really good. Even finish the sentence without laughing. I know. The thing is, he is exactly what the music required.
Right.
It was a very Latin / gospel feel. Mm-hmm. And so they needed a person of Hispanic origin who was going to be able to like feel the music. And Paul Simon is a musician first.
Right.
So possibly he also thought that's the only important thing. In musical theater, the only important thing is to be able to sing, right? It's hard.
And then I think about minority actors don't have enough parts. And you've stunt casted right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and this was back in 1998. So mm-hmm. this is not even that long ago. Right. So, yeah, it's rough. It is rough. So I mentioned this before, that the music in the show is kind of a mix of doo-wop, gospel, and Latin music. It did receive Tony nomination for Best Original Score, Best Orchestrations, and Best Scenic Designs. So the music, and I did listen to the music. The music is available. It was not a cast recording. It was more of a concept album
before. All sung by Paul.
Well, there are other people singing it, okay. But Paul Simon is heavily involved in the recording as well.
Okay.
But it's worth listening to. I think if you divorce the music from the musical, mm-hmm. it is a really great album. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't perpetuate the story.
Right.
It doesn't help tell the story, which is what musical theater is. It's telling a story.
It is.
Simon enlisted the help of Derek Walcott, who I mentioned before, Nobel Prize winning author and poet. Their working relationship was awkward at first. Mm-hmm. Simon wasn't used to the kind of creative collaboration. He was, well, and I'm sure that that's why Simon and Garfunkel broke up, is because he was used to doing things all on his own.
Right.
And he didn't like that kind of collaboration. And Walcott initially disliked the show's main character, which I can get behind.
Right.
Simon insisted the music be written first, with the lyrics set to the songs, which again is so difficult in musical theater because you have to tell the story first. mm-hmm. Let's see. Oh, but eventually the two did finish the show with the music composed by Simon and the lyrics being about 50-50 Simon Walcott. Simon spent 5 years and almost $1 million recording the music, which is a completely unorthodox approach to constructing a Broadway show. Typically, writers will deliver a script and the score to the director, who will then assemble and create the final production. But Simon wanted to retain full artistic control through the entire production. And he soon encountered resistance for not playing by the usual rules, which I'm not surprised by either. Simon was often cited as being disdainful of Broadway.
Why are you writing a show then? If you
Well, I think he was not narcissistic, but like he thought
not narcissistic.
He was narcissistic enough to think that he could come in and change the rules and like rewrite Broadway when Broadway's done pretty well since Oscar and Hammerstein. Right.
Well, so here's the thing about these successful men and women mm-hmm. who do end up sort of quote unquote rewriting the rules successfully yeah. is they already have a reverence for the craft.
Yes.
So it's like Lin-Manuel, mm-hmm. Stephen Sondheim, they've created a completely new way to do musical theater.
Because they grew up listening to
That's
it
right.
and loved it so much that they thought, what can I do to make it better?
That's right. And Stephen was mentored by Oscar Hammerstein. Right. So it's like one of these things where if you don't already love it, if you don't already have a reverence for it and a respect for mm-hmm. it, then there's no, you can't just come in and be like, I'm just going to do my own thing right. over here, completely divorced from yeah. everything that's ever been done before and still have it work, because the basic rules still apply.
Yes.
They just do.
They should. In interviews, he was actually, he said he hoped that he could reinvigorate what he saw as a stale musical form. He was also quoted, let's see, Broadway music ended up in a weird cul-de-sac, probably because it had never been energized by rock and roll. Okay, can I just point out that every time rock and roll has been injected into musical theater, it has been not actual musical theater. It's been more of a review show,
well, i.e. Mamma Mia. Rent.
Rent is different, but even Rent was musical theater-ized rock and roll. I don't know. It's different. There's, it's still different because you're still telling the story.
Right.
And I think that is the difference between musical theater and any other genre, even though it sounds similar.
Right, right.
It is different because the story is still being told through the song.
He just wanted to make a rock album and yeah. put it on stage.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Theater producer Rocco Landsman is quoted as saying, the idea that you can, at a strike, rewrite an art form is a little presumptuous. I can't say that people in the theater community were rooting for Paul Simon after all the things he said about Broadway. In 2011, Paul Simon actually does admit that his inexperience. Mm-hmm. He says that it's not easy to write for the theater for the first time. For people coming out of popular music, writing songs that further the plot is different from writing whatever is on your mind. It's a different discipline. So it only took him 10 years, but he did.
It's not even the first time. It's like, musical theater is just difficult. These people work their fingers to the bone.
Yeah.
They work for years. Some respect.
You can't expect, I mean, even the people that were successful on their first go around, you can't expect that.
No.
And in fact, I feel like the people that do expect it will never succeed in that right. way. But the people like, who wrote The Drowsy Chaperone for his wife?
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember his name right now, but like, he was the sweetest man in the whole entire world because he just wrote this as a gift to his wife.
Right.
And it ended up being this enormous success. And yeah. he was so cute in it.
Yeah.
So
man in chair.
I just wanted to hug him.
I did see him.
Yeah, I did
Man
too.
Man in chair.
It was so good. But yeah. he was utterly surprised mm-hmm. that it made this success. Lin-Manuel was the same way in In the Heights.
Yeah.
He wrote it as a gift to his wife. And it ended up... Isn't that?
No. No. In the Heights, he wrote started writing way before he met Vanessa.
Oh, that's right. It was like a college project.
Yeah.
That's right.
He was writing that show for... My God.
For ages.
Yeah.
And then he was completely surprised
yeah.
by its success, which I just love. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Simon assembled a team of of financiers and producers, including James L. Niederlander and Brad Gray, who is the former chairman and CEO of Paramount. Mm-hmm. And the team was able to raise and contribute several million dollars, but none had the experience producing a Broadway show. Mm-hmm. So not only did he not have experience, he surrounded himself with people that had no experience in musical theater whatsoever, and had millions of dollars to succeed or fail with. The production cost an estimated $11 million, which was very high for Broadway at that time. Some of the cost was because of Simon's insistence that musicians participate in the rehearsals with the actors. That is unheard of. Like, in rehearsal process, you don't have a full orchestra. You usually have the musical director or the assistant musical director, mm-hmm. and a piano. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just a keyboard. Mm-hmm. But you never have the full orchestra. So the fact that, I mean, and I love that he felt that the music was that important. Mm-hmm. But again, you have to kind of work with the system the way it is, because the system has been there for a long, long time. Right. Like, it knows what it's doing. To round out some of the unorthodox moves, Simon hired the director last. He just didn't want competition. In the final 18 months before its opening, there were three different directors, ending with Mark Morris, who was also the choreographer. The show's eventual release date was delayed by last-minute editing and restructuring. Oh, that's so stressful. Derek Walcott effectively walked out of the show after resisting rewrites. So this man, who, again, it's like, I'm sure that Derek's stuff is amazing. Right. You don't hire a Nobel Prize winning poet and author, right, and not expect it to be just amazing material. But the way you put together a Broadway show is that you throw everything on the page and then you whittle it down, mm-hmm. until that's your finished product. And I don't think that that an author and poet of his stature was really ready for that kind of a process. Mm-hmm. Ruben Blades, again, I don't know how to pronounce his name. It might be Blades. I'm going to say Blades because that's how it's spelled. So if I'm wrong, just tell me. Ruben Blades said, I admire him deeply. Speaking of Derek Walcott, he's a Nobel laureate, but there are cultural nuances that are lost in translation that Walcott was simply unable to catch. I also had struggles with Simon, telling him that that a particular line would never have come out of a Latino's mouth if the play is to be believable. Mm-hmm. Jerry Zaks was hired in an unofficial capacity to help Mark Morris. He said, I've done about as much as I can with what's there. Oh, heavens. The production was in previews during rewriting, which put the cast in a difficult position of performing the original version each night while they learned and rehearsed rewritten versions in the afternoons.
So was there a tryout for this? It doesn't seem like it.
No. No. So there you go.
This is like the major problem. Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know. I mean, you set yourself up for the finished product that you get. On January 29th of 1998, it opened at the Marquee Theater to very poor reviews. Ben Brantley from the New York Times praised the songs from the album, but said that translation to stage was lacking. Everything, this is a quote, everything in the music melts together, practically nothing's said, done, and shown on stage seems to connect with anything else. Brantley admired Anthony and Blade's talents, but he criticized the writing of their character, saying that Mark Anthony has been given no proper role to play. He wrote that the historical footage of Agron stole the show, especially young Sal's media statements that his mother could watch him burn. Nothing, this is another quote, nothing that Mr. Anthony or Mr. Blades does in The Cape Man begins to approach the disturbing complexity of that image. So this was like a multimedia type production. They had a big screen on the back of the stage where they would put different videos of what was going on in New York City at that time. And they would have actual footage of Salvador Agron at the time as well. And so that was what Brantley was talking about, it just being a real disconnect. An article in The Progressive suggests cultural factors that led to bad reviews, citing Mainstream backlash against Simon's disparagement of the Broadway system and discomfort with racial and ethnic themes in the Broadway core audience. It points out that reviews were generally positive among out-of-town critics and non-white New York critics, but not white New York critics and not actual New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. Producers discussed strategy to keep it open until the Tony nominations in May. The community protested, Ebony. Some were upset that Simon would choose Agron as the subject of a play in the first place. They felt that the show glorified a murderer, and the critics at the New York Times wrote, "The outlaw as hero is a ticklish topic. Robin Hood gains a lot by being a medieval legend rather than a modern-day reality. With Salvador Agron, the problem intensifies. He is fact, not fiction." So people had a really difficult time looking past the fact that this man was a multiple murderer. And was, by all accounts, completely unremorseful when he was first taken in. So they would actually have people at the theater, at the stage doors, at the entrance, protesting this show. So that people would actually have to walk through these protesters to go and see the show. Agron was nobody's hero. And the show closed on March 28th of 1998 after only 68 performances. Mm-hmm. I'm actually kind of surprised that they were able to keep it open that long. And right. I think, honestly, it wasn't because of people actually coming to the show, but it was that idea that if we just stay open long enough, we'll get nominated for the Tony Award. Mm-hmm. And they were, mm-hmm. but probably through the help of someone's pocket, right. not necessarily ticket sales. It's not the least successful of the shows that we're podcasting, but it is remarkable because of the content of the mm-hmm. show. Mm-hmm. I think... if you think back at any of the musicals that Broadway has had, I can't think of a one that glorifies a murderer quite so spectacularly as The Cape Man.
Right.
It's very difficult. I mean, like, it's difficult for me, Pamela, to divorce the idea that we are essentially celebrating with musical theater this kid who... murdered not because it was another gang member, but because he was too quick and just decided, well, the other gang isn't here, so I'm just going to stab these two kids. And these two kids are probably never even mentioned in the musical, besides the fact that they're stabbed. So it is difficult. So Anthony Krasinski and Robert Young Jr. are the ones that are innocent, completely yeah. innocent of any wrongdoing at mm-hmm. all in this, except for being at a park late at night. Mm-hmm. And their murderer has now got this musical written about him. It's difficult. I mean, yeah. yes, he did some great things later in his life. When he got out of prison, he really did, you know, hit the ground running as far as being an activist against mm-hmm. gangs. He would go to schools and speak to them. He would use his own life experience as mm-hmm. the example of what not to do. But it is still hard to to go and watch a musical based on that. It was a touchy subject, and it was a real touchy subject, I think, for a lot of people when the show was running. That's the end. I know, it's rough. It's rough.
That's a tough one. I mean, with the Legs Diamond one,
mm-hmm.
The difference there is, like, the story, you know, it's fictitious.
Yeah. So based on a real person, right. but it's all fictional.
Right.
This was not, the retelling of,
right.
but, and I think, because it is worth listening to the music because it is really good music. It's Paul Simon. Mm-hmm. So how can it not be good music? But it's incredibly unapologetic. Mm. The lyrics take no responsibility for his actions. In fact, the opening number almost says, because of everything that happened to him, that gives him license to act however, that's the reason I'm acting this way. It's that's okay. Why, it's not my fault. It's because New York was like this. It's because my stepdad was like this. It's because, the nuns were like this. It's like he never, ever
takes responsibility.
And that all comes from Paul Simon. And that was the difficult part for me, because listening to the music, if you just close your eyes and listen to the nice, gospel / Latin feel, and there's a lot of really beautiful harmonies in it. It's really beautifully sung. It's really beautifully performed. But then you listen to the lyrics and you're like, hang on. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What do you think?
I understand why the people were protesting.
Yeah.
I really understand it.
Me too.
I'm like really pretty quiet. This is like, it's just a heavy
one. It's intense. It's very intense. Yeah. It's like, and that's another thing. I mentioned this before in one of the other podcasts that we recorded, probably Rebecca. I love the gothic musicals. Mm-hmm. I love the emotional stuff, but it's like, it's all emotion based on a fictitious story.
Right.
So it's fantasy, and I am able, Sweeney Todd is about a man who wreaks vengeance on an entire town by murdering them and then eating them.
The source material is based on a true story,
but the way it's told
right.
gives me the ability to laugh.
Right. Because it's more allegorical.
Completely. But it's like, this was not told that way at all. Mm-hmm. This was told like a historical nonfiction.
Yeah.
It's heavy. Woo. So thanks for listening.
No, we're just like,
So yeah. Hey, could you kind of do me a favor and like, share, and follow us on Facebook? Ebony thought I was being serious, really, like asking her, but she looked at me so earnestly. She's like, yeah, I can help you. What do you need? We are on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
And you can follow us on Twitter at TGA.
B-way! That's my favorite thing ever. I'm going to go home singing it. I hope you do too.
And you can also email us at tgabway@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Send us stories. I love listening to reading stories.
Good stories. If you were in any of these shows that we talked about,
we want to hear about it. You can remain completely anonymous. We promise.
You
can.
Just make sure you tell us that you want to be anonymous.
Otherwise, we will tell the full story. Any kind of personal connection to these shows, I would love to hear it. Even if you have a connection to the main character that the musical is based on, let me know. Love to hear that. Corrections, anything like that.
Yeah, corrections and omissions. If there's something that we left out that you think is important, we can talk about that on our intermissions episode.
Intermissionsode.
Intermissionsode.
That's what I've been calling it. Intermissionsode.
Intermissionsode. Any questions for us as well?
Rate, share, and subscribe. Yes. Rate, review, and subscribe. There's always three, and I always mess it up. Rate, review, and subscribe us on iTunes when you hear this podcast.
Tell your friends about us.
Please. Because we want everyone to hear all about theater. We want the whole world to feel that theater is as important to them as it was to us when we were 10 years old.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Nerdy theater love and Ebony.
It's all I listen to. That's all you listen to. Well, praise music and
yeah.
That's like all my mom would try to blast country music through the house.
Oh, no.
Look, we're not a country family, but she liked Brooks and Dunn, so she would listen to them. Saturday morning, she'd start cleaning the house and crank up the radio listening to Brooks and Dunn.
My mom had the gospel station. That was Heaven 600. And you had your Shirley Caesar.
Okay.
And you had your, the lady who was in Leap of Faith, and now I've forgotten her name. I talked about her.
Loretta.
I can't remember her name right now.
I can't remember either. It's probably upsetting. Not even Loretta.
Yeah. I think it started with an A. But anyway, she would be on there, and that's
good
what we
stuff.
Have.
Yeah. But see, I would be in my bedroom listening
country
to
music.
Lame Is and Into the Woods.
Oh, Into the Woods.
It was the first CD I ever bought for myself. Remember how I told you Les Mis was the first cassette?
Yeah.
It was four cassette tapes for one show that I bought for myself. But the first CD I ever bought for myself was Into the Woods. It was good. Fun it's because I used to have the cassette tape of the British version of Into the Woods, mm-hmm. which had one extra song that the witch and the Rapunzel sang together. It was mm-hmm. such a good song. But then when I bought the Broadway version, that song was cut.
With Bernie.
Love Bernie. Bernie's Bernadette Peters is the reason why Broadway is where I wanted to belong.
Oh, Bernie.
Love her.
All right. Well, that's it. The Cape Man comes to a close.
There it is. And scene.
Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.